A serious turn this morning on the conversation to Raqqa, Syria. It's a 2,000-year-old city taken over by the Islamic State, becoming the scene of public executions, brutal persecution of all who defy ISIS. The city is closed off. The only way the outside world can learn about the crisis there is through the work of citizen journalists. These men and women are risking their lives in a city where any attempt to communicate beyond the city walls carries a death sentence. They call themselves Raqqa is being slaughtered silently. My colleague Chris Vandercook spoke with Abdulaziz Al-Hamsa, one of the group's original members, about what has happened to the city of his birth.
ISIS came to my city in 2013, and they stayed there until January 2014 when the clashes started with the opposition. Back that time, they were able to control the whole city, and then they started to commit human rights violations against the civilians. Personally, I had to leave the city because I was an activist covering what's going on there, and they discovered my identity, and the same happened with a couple of my colleagues. So we had to flee Syria to Turkey, and when we got there and we were updated about the human rights violations from our family members, from our relatives, friends, and then we decided that we need to do something. And here when we started our group, Raqqa is being slaughtered silently, and or RBSS.
Yeah. Was it a gradual takeover when ISIS came to town?
So ISIS arrived to Raqqa City in April 2013, and step by step they started to change many things. It was the first time for me to see public execution in the city. It was the first time in the city itself. So then we noticed that there was something strange. We started to demonstrate against ISIS, and then step by step they gained more power. They were able to recruit many people, and then they started their fight with the other groups that were in the city, and then they control all of it. And after they control it in January 2014, they started to establish the rules step by step. Mm-hmm. So they didn't come with all the rules once.
Yeah,
so so they did it step by step, and then they got to a point where they change everything. And they started to show their brutality to the locals by doing the execution in several ways, just to shake them not to do anything against ISIS. Then in that time, we started our group and our organization to report about what's going on in the city, what's going on in ISIS territories, because ISIS prevented all the media organization to get to the city and cover what's going on. They wanted only their media offices to work, to be able to recruit people by spreading their propaganda online. So we were like the only group who could report or work from the city, because we're local. We used to do that things, our activities against the Syrian government, but we developed it to do it against the government and ISIS at the same time, and then the story started from there.
What kind of materials did you use? Cell phones, cameras, to document?
So we use all the tools that we can use. So we started with cameras, and then it was extremely hard to use a camera because it's a big device that could be organized.
Visible.
So, yeah, and then then we started to use the mobile phones, and later on ISIS started to spread checkpoints all over the city. They spread cameras, security cameras, all over the city, and their cars, their soldier fighters, they were like moving around all the time. So it was also hard to use the mobile phone. So here we started to use kind of security equipment to film. And sometimes when we check it safe, we use also the mobile phone. And later on, all the materials that my colleagues in Raqqa collect, they sent it to me and my colleagues outside of Raqqa, where we publish everything online.
Each time you handled one of those materials, you were putting yourself at risk of your life, right?
It's true because that's what happened with many of my colleagues. So we had executions, arresting, assassinations, and it was not only in ISIS territories. In other parts in Syria, where is no ISIS, even outside Syria and Turkey, we had assassinations. And like for me in Germany, I'm getting threats all the time. So yeah, so it was like a risky thing doing anything. And for me, I'm not in that risk comparing with my colleagues, because they're risking their life every single second. They might, any of them might be arrested, might be killed in any second. So for me, like all the time when I get a video from Raqqa or a photo, I just look at it, and the first thing I think about it, how my colleagues did take this photo.
How did they get it out of the city?
Yes.
Your group is called Raqqa is being slaughtered silently, and the word silently implies that the worldwide media have been ignoring the story. Is that how it felt to you?
Yes, that's it. And it was like the media, the international community, and especially when we started our organization, but it was like in April 2014. So no one noticed ISIS. No one was talking about ISIS, both media, international community, even like other Syrians and like many Syrians in other cities. So they haven't heard about Raqqa and that atrocities that ISIS was committing there. So that was the reason why we said, like, silently.
From your perspective, you said earlier that ISIS, when they came to town, recruited some people, that some people actually joined them. Why would someone join an organization so brutal? What is the attraction? What is the appeal?
Yeah, so ISIS is using several ways to recruit people. Not all the people that they joined ISIS because they believed in ISIS or the ideology of ISIS. Mm-hmm. So talking about ISIS territories, people are living in really bad conditions.
In fear.
So where there is no jobs, where there is no ways to earn money, and where everything is getting expensive day after day. And many people, they have children, they want to feed them, they have a family they want to take care of. And ISIS didn't force anyone to join, but they forced the people to live in these conditions, to force them to join in an indirect way. So many people, they had not enough money to feed their children, so they knew that joining ISIS means that they will get money in dollars. They will get a house for free. They will get cars for free. They will get gas for free. They will get oil for free. So many people, they went and joined ISIS only for that thing, not for other things. Others, they went and joined to get power. People who were, like, ignored in the community. People who were feeling weakness all the time. So they found ISIS as a way to get power or, like, to gain power. And then they turned to be leaders. And that's not only about locals, it's about foreigners. I've done many researches about foreign fighters who went and joined ISIS. And yeah, I got many examples that many of them, they were like ignored in their community. They were in the jails. They were doing nothing in their community. They had no jobs. And then they went and joined ISIS, turned to be leaders. And then all the media started to talk about them. And others, they went to join for like women, for sex, for like several reasons.
And once they join, they might end up killing people from their own city. They might killing their fellow men and women, right?
Yeah, so, and that happened, like, in many cases, like, many brother killed each other, like, being in different groups or being in ISIS, and, like, son killed father and father killed son, and then we're living, like, in a tribal community, so that means the family is something valuable, but within ISIS they destroyed that thing, because right now you find like cousin killing each other, like family members, relatives killing each other, and that was like the way how ISIS pushed everyone. So ISIS wanted to break the strong relations between the family members itself, between the relative itself, and between the community itself. Because for us, like in Raqqa, the population of it in 2011, it was over 1 million. So, and in some point, every single person from those 1 million should know the other in some point. If I don't know that person, I might know his brother, his father, his cousin. If I'm not, my brother might know. So we should have links in some point. So they worked on breaking these links.
Once you break that fabric of society, people give themselves permission to start killing each other, is what you're saying.
Yes.
It's a very troubling picture of humanity, isn't it, Aziz?
For sure. Like, people, many people lost the feeling of being a human, because ISIS, the main thing after joining ISIS is being sent to an ISIS ideology camp where they teach everyone their own ideology. And then people, they leave this camp with like a brainwashing, so they lose the feeling of a human being. So that's the reason why you see them like bombing themselves, and they're smiling before they bombing themselves. They're going to the clashes, to the fights, and they know that they wanna go and they don't wanna return. And I was so surprised, like, if there is like a suicide attack or whatever, you find them fighting who's gonna make it. So instead of like pushing each other, no, you go, yeah, you go.
They want to kill themselves.
Yeah, they fight. No, I'm gonna go. I'm not gonna go. So they fight to wanna go. So that, like, when you lose your humanity, when you lose your feeling, you might do anything, and you might kill your family, you might kill any person, any human being, because you're not in your mind. And then you get to that point that you just want to die for having this idea of having 72 virgin. So sometimes, like, they focus on like one part of the human being, and like ISIS focused more on the sexual part of the person, like being 18, 19 years old, and like most of the people there, they haven't had sex. So yeah. Focusing on that thing that you have like 72 women, they're more beautiful than the whole woman in the world. So they focus on that things, and sending people just to be killed to get those 72 women. And like focusing on many other things and giving this way as a way of recruitment. So that made many people losing their humanity.
Aziz, were you raised in the Muslim faith?
Yes, and like I'm Muslim.
Does it seem to you that this is a perversion, a corruption of the Muslim faith?
Like, ISIS used the Islam as the way to have their popularity, to recruit people from everywhere. So, and like right now, the religion, an important thing, because if you're talking about Muslims, here you're talking about millions, if not billions. And then, so it's the easiest way to recruit a huge number is to focusing on the religion. And then, like, they've done many things against Islam. For us, like, okay, Raqqa, we're like a Muslim community. We have, like, Christians. We have, like, many minorities. We had many nations. But for us, like, okay, we're, like, living in this peaceful community, and like, it's up to everyone if he want to practice his religion or not. So we had not that a problem, and when ISIS came, they changed everything. And the main thing that 95% of ISIS victims are Muslims, so they consider themselves Muslim. They say that they represent Islam, but when you look at their victims, they're like 95% Muslims. So 95% are Muslims. So, and they affected like the Muslim people, and then they created this bad photo or like idea about Muslims everywhere. So many people, they started to hate Muslim just because of ISIS. So I faced that things many times in many cities, in many countries, only because being Muslim. So people started not to look at you up to your religion and like up to your color, up to many things. And ISIS was like the main thing how they created this heatness among the people against Muslims.
Abdulaziz Al-Hamza is one of the founders of this citizen journalist collective. Raqqa is being slaughtered silently. His story is told in the documentary City of Ghosts, which is being shown through tomorrow at the Honolulu Museum of Arts, Doris Duke Theater.